professor G.S. Vajpayee, sir, Vice Chancellor at Rajiv Gandhi National University of Law in India, for his delivery to you, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Sachin. The title that I intend to have for my paper is Conceptualization of Jurisprudence from Decolonial Perspective. I am not focusing on everything, keeping the time limit in mind. So I would be mainly talking about the colonialization of knowledge and philosophy as it happened as a consequence of the experiences of colonialization in different countries. And I would begin with a very important scholarly remark by Lewis, who actually
recording in progress
said that the ways in which the philosophy could be colonized. And he is talking about five ways which are very crucial to build up this discussion. And he is talking how the philosophy is colonized, because the colonization of the philosophy has far serious consequences for a nation state in long term in a variety of ways. So therefore he said the first way is the racial and ethnic origins, how these ethnic and racial origins are impacted. Second, he is talking about the coloniality of its norms. So I mentioned in the morning that the colonization of norms is a very, very crucial thing to happen. And third, which is more sort of contemporary in nature, that is the market commodification. And fourth is disciplinary dissidence. And fifth, he says, is solipsism. So what the author calls a teleological suspension of philosophy as consideration among other practices of thought. So if I start from this point of departure, then as we understand that jurisprudence is all about the knowledge and the philosophy, and in that sense, jurisprudential exposition of legal thought facilitates us to delve deeper into certain philosophical questions. So the question that starts with why, against what? And these are the questions relating to very basically wisdom, knowledge, and reasons. And knowledge, as we understand, is independent and universal in its existence, all depends on particular ideology or approach. Now, whether such knowledge has any teleological construction, and whether it operates within a constructive normativity, so if I refer to Foucault's sense of knowledge is, he said knowledge is not for knowing. He said knowledge is for cutting. Now this criticality which is emerging from the gaining of knowledge is something which is the core function of the knowledge and not really for the purpose for which the knowledge exists. Therefore, this expression is strategically important in situation where knowledge itself is confined between the boundaries of global north, which is colonial, and global south, which is decolonial. So if I take this perspective, so where former is dominating the world, we understand, and later is somehow living under the influence. Thus, it has created a hegemony of its own, and colonization of legal knowledge has epistemized the inclusibility of such knowledge. Therefore, this colonization of legal philosophy has constructed the fixed boundaries of legal discourse. Now, I am talking about the construction of these, false boundaries which were there as a result of colonization, where the legal philosophy as a discipline offers as a space for openness and testament to freedom, as it facilitates the true deliberative democratic discourse, where equal and open space is provided for different values and practices. So it works on a principle of heterogeneity and discourages homogeneity. Therefore, in its epistemological terms, there shall not be any hierarchy and knowledge should remain free and independent. But to what extent the knowledge remains free and independent, that is something to be seen in the context of colonialization. And because colonialization has promoted a particular norm as modern, I would like to repeat this sentence, that colonialization has promoted a particular norm as modern and dehumanized other forms of knowledge. So therefore, this expression was promoted and made visible over others. And therefore, colonial legacy of law becomes insider, and we call it civilized. So what is insider and civilized is more important than the indigenous knowledge, which was considered to be outsider or at times barbarian. Now let us understand this impact of insider and outsider formations. So in fact, the post-colonial studies had discussed and analyzed or formulated the concept of truth from global North perspective and continue to reflect the colonial totality. So it has shadowed our traditional values and knowledge with the veil of modernity. So we considered that the knowledge emanating from global North experiences are modern, and therefore we are actually moving away from the realities of indigenous societies. Therefore, this colonialism has promoted the imperialist ideas, which are no more than the greed of power, resources, and land. This had ruined the identity and culture in several spaces, and that is the most drastic consequence. So in contrast, the decolonial idea, what is the function of then the decolonial idea? It says that it proposes a kind of openness and freedom of thought. So we are actually talking about that openness of freedom of thought. So the cleanliness of coloniality of being and knowledge, the detachment of rhetoric of modernity and its imperial imaginary. So decolonial perspective is all about understanding the heterogeneity of knowledge and deconstructing the epistemic homogeneity. Therefore, it is a dialogue between Eurocentric thinking that is the object of critique. Now, I think we all understand the entire origin of this criticism rests in the critique of Eurocentric thinking. That is the object of critique, and non-European thinking reclaimed from deconstruction, repression, and neglect. So therefore, it is about the first-person perspective. In the morning, Professor Yuvraj was saying about the indigenous jurisprudence. I am saying that this is the first-person perspective. If I say that this terminology was first used by Ronald Morris. So Ronald Morris says, reflection on the history of an idea. This was his work, where he was saying that it is about voicing our own idea and philosophy. So it provides a central stage to local and individual experience where one can think in a deinstitutionalized manner. So it is about understanding and appreciating diverse culture, norms, and values. Thus, decolonial theory promotes a kind of diversity and human fellowship beyond borders. That is very important message, which was actually pointed out by Kiran Asher. And in that sense, the decolonial perspective provides the opportunity to know the Eastern or non-Western understanding of jurisprudential values as enriched through ages. So for instance, if I go to India, Nyaya philosophy of India, it talks about four means of gaining knowledge. These things were sent to oblivion by design. Now I am saying that Indian system of Nyaya philosophy, it has four meaning of gaining knowledge. So pratyaksha, which is perception. Omana, this is the inference. Upamana, this is comparison. And shabda, that is the word. So these were the means of gaining the knowledge. It provides for questioning of knowledge in order to attain true knowledge. So similarly, the Mimamsa rule. Now, Mimamsa rule of interpretation is now the part of legal curriculum. In most universities, even the Western scholars have referred to the Mimamsa rule of interpretation. B.N. Sri Krishna, if you look at Mimamsa versus Maxwell, student bar review, and he is talking about this construction. Even if I go to Amrit Sen, who argued values such as freedom, equality, tolerance have been part of our ancient tradition of East. Thus, the doctrine of living originalism argues about understanding the local experience while interpreting the constitutional values, which is exactly what we are doing. And this concept was developed by Jack Balkin. And he said about this originalism, which is very important. Therefore, decolonial perspective of knowledge is about knowing our traditional values and system of knowledge. It doesn't follow a kind of arrogant approach towards destroying the knowledge, which is colonial. So we are not for a minute saying that you should destroy the colonial knowledge, but rather it is all about deconstruction. And it debunks the idea of othering. Now, idea of othering is a very powerful expression of criticalism, modern criticalism, which is emerging in the legal spaces so prominently because of huge scholarship growing. And this othering, which tends to promote the virtue of sameness. And in this manner, it represents Dworkin concept of law as integrity, which is about learning and interpreting legal knowledge from all perspectives. Therefore, the decolonial method of research in law and related fields equips researchers to question the unique within quote, scientific knowledge and empirically driven proposition of grand narrative of truth. And this is a wonderful reference I wish to make about modernity or colonity, which has promoted the data obsession among people where everything is analyzed through data. We understand this very important work by Carol Sanders. And I will now reflect at a colonial Western construction of identity, gender, and sexuality. So as discussed earlier, Western discourse of law justice operates within its constructed boundaries. It operates within fixed, binary patterns. And these binary patterns were again very drastically, researched by, scholars Carol again, who is saying that for instance, the identity of individual is constructed within a mainstream race, gender, sex, cognitive and physical capabilities. I'm sure the Supreme Courts, even in Nepal, even in the US and India, now are struggling with the question of sexual identity, individual primacy. And therefore, in India, some landmark Supreme Court judgments focusing upon privacy, individuality, autonomy, sexuality, privacy. They have actually, deconstructed this colonial understanding of this concept, in a big way. And this is the creation of new knowledge. And therefore, it created a kind of new normal identities. It has normalized our thinking, actually, in a new way. Otherwise, we were being normalized by the colonial understanding of all these expressions. If I illustrate this proposition through an example very quickly, where a lesbian couple decided they wanted to have a child, and preferably a deaf one child they wanted. So both the partners were deaf, and proudly so. They were proud of their deafness. So like others in the deaf pride community, they consider deafness as a cultural identity, not a disability to be cured. So being deaf is just a way of life. How many of us think this? Deaf is just a way of life. And in hope of conceiving a deaf child, they sought out a sperm donor with 5 generations of deafness in his family. This is something very unusual. And they succeeded. So they were surprised when their story was reported in Washington Post, brought widespread condemnation. Accordingly, people charged the couple of inflicting disability of their child. Because you don't have choices. So we construct the identity of the people, you know, and we think that they are disabled. But for them, there is a absolutely normal. So it is wrong to make a child deep by design. According to Kapil, they do not view this as a different from what they state, you know, couples to do when they have children. Similarly, if suppose if there is an advertisement that you know that appeared in Harvard Crimson, so an infertile couple was seeking egg donor with the specific conditions. Accordingly, the donor had to be you know at least 5'10" tall, athletic, and to have a combined you know score of some SAT, which is called 1400. And he would be offered a payment of $50,000. So there was no kind of objection to this kind of advertisement because society was quite acceptable because you are probably going with the expectation of the society. So this is the situation. So this colonial version of sexual discourse, if I say, was institutionalized in eugenics-centric theory, which rejects sexual heterogeneity. And accordingly, it offers a solution, an alternative to its own constructed problem. These are their own constructed problem. So, for example, it offers a fixed labeling through providing the institutional identity to human diversity. This decolonial expression offers counter-narrative to these institutionalized, patterns and influences. So to that extent, I understand the function of decolonialism, and I'll sum up with the recent developments as were mentioned in the morning also through the Indian Supreme Court, when Indian Supreme Court decided to decolonize the laws by striking down the several legal norms, including law relating to identity, law relating to homosexuality. Nawtej Johar versus Union of India in 2018 became a sort of path-breaking judgment, which has actually, initially they were criminalizing the carnal intercourse against the order of nature, but this has been now, decriminalized. So again, the issues relating to sedition and all these things are being looked at from fresh lenses, and Indian Supreme Court is perhaps the strongest in the world in terms of propagating a jurisprudence of equality, where they are essentially deconstructing the sexual notions. And I can go on saying number of cases where sexual identities are defined. So like, for instance, homosexuality, lesbian, LGBT issues. So it's a path-breaking judgment, and probably it is redefining the jurisprudential understanding of legal norms through decolonial perspective. So I suppose some of these ideas are very, very unique and important in terms of developing fresh thoughts about the global South normativity in terms of understanding criminal behavior or behavior which is tabooed or other kinds of issues which are criminalized at large. So with this, I close, and I suppose I have shared some ideas quite limited to the philosophy and knowledge specific facets of jurisprudential understanding and deconstruction on this subject. I once again thanks the organizer, particularly Professor Yuvraj, for providing me this opportunity to share some of my thought. I'm really looking forward to host the colleagues in KSL, including Professor Yuvraj, to this university. And later this year, maybe we can organize a similar interaction focusing on some new ideas and new jurisprudence in this part of world. And that would be the occasion to host all of you again. Until then, thank you so much. Please take care. Take care of yourself. Thank you so much. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Professor Vajpayee, for your delivery. I think it helped us to understand or take the discourse towards constructing true heterogeneity of legal theories and thoughts, transcending the false boundaries created by coloniality of the past. So.